Well, good afternoon. It is about 33 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. This is Hannah Floor. You're listening to KFSK, and it is time for Campus Connection. That is a call-in show with school officials, and I am joined here in Studio One by Petersburg School District Superintendent Erica Clute Painter.
Hello.
You have a long title. And by School Board President Sarah Holmgren.
Hello.
Thanks for being here, you two. We're just going to dive into budget talk because Governor Dunleavy had vetoed Senate Bill 140. This is an education funding bill. He vetoed that last week. And then there was a vote yesterday afternoon, an attempt to override that veto. It failed by one vote. I know that in the agenda for the school board meeting, Erica, you were going to talk about this meeting that you guys had on Saturday, looking for support for that bill. You had the meeting on Saturday. The bill did not get quite enough support. I'm curious what you have to say to the public about the prospect of putting together a budget for this coming year.
Well, that is the question of the day. It's been a busy 5 days, a disappointing 5 days. I mean, there were some positives in the sense that, you know, the board wanted to meet and wanted to discuss passing the resolution, which they did, and we gathered quickly and had the meeting, and I think that they deserve recognition for that effort. I think it's a strong statement that we are, as a district, and really I hope as a community, supportive of making a true change in what our state is doing with regard to funding. And it's not just a local conversation. It is beyond past time that this is addressed, and it is frustrating to continue to be used in some sort of political warfare that's going on, and that's what it feels like. And it feels like there's a public kind of attack on public education in general, and I think just some general misinformation, I think, that is continuing to be kind of shared and focused on, that's distracting from the real conversation. So preparing a budget, every year it seems like we have some of this conversation, but I think this is really creating an even larger stress on our district and every other district in the state, just to be pinballed back and forth. You know, it's going through. There's a joint coalition that's in support of it, and they pass it overwhelmingly, and then it's vetoed. And then is there pressure to override the veto? And then there's 39 votes, not 40. And then he can still reduce that funding to any level that he wants.
Yeah, that's a point that I think it was certainly lost on me initially, that even if this had been overridden, if they had 40 or more votes, Dunleavy is able to go in and line item veto anything in there. So it would not have been a guarantee to have that education funding.
Nope, it's not a guarantee.
I think you would have had a harder time lowering it too low just because of that. But then they could still override that line item, but it would have been more people, even more.
Yep.
I think it's 75%.
It's a 3/4.
Right? Yep.
Yeah. It's
two-thirds.
Really high numbers required.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which to me still is like, really? I'm beyond frustrated. I was so angry yesterday, and I didn't, as I told Eric, I don't even know where to vent my anger at this point, because it to me is so elementary. It's districts have been doing the same, you know, trying to do the best we can with the money that we do get, and more of it gets eaten up by things that we have no control over, like our utilities or maintenance items that break. You have to fix those things. And, you know, people have forgotten that bill wasn't just about the base student allocation. There were other aspects of it that were going to help schools in rural Western Alaska immensely, as well as just student transportation, that a lot of us, I don't think there's any district that can pay for their student transportation out of what is already given. You have to pull from your general fund. So then now funds that would normally go to the classroom are now going to just trying to get kids to school. And it's your often most marginalized kids in larger communities that desperately need the bus system. So it's not something that you want to cut at all.
And just to clarify, when you mm-hmm. say school transportation, you're not talking about traveling for basketball.
No, we're talking about school
talking
bus.
About school
getting
buses.
You to school and home. Yep, yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, the school board had a work session with the borough assembly late last month, mm-hmm. in late February, to talk about funding. Can you tell me what came out of that?
Well, that was just an initial conversation with them. We had had a pretty thorough conversation publicly at the school board meeting, you know, the week or a couple weeks before that. Mm-hmm. So we had, and we've been meeting a bit with Borough Manager Giesbrecht and with Jody Tau, discussing the fact that we are coming to make an official request this year for funding to the cap, which could amount to $3.4 million. Mm-hmm. And that is necessary in addition to the funding that really needs to be coming from the state as well.
And that's not going to cover this funding that you're, the lack of funding from the state, but it will help to some degree.
A tiny microscopic bit.
I think that what we're seeing in the news around the state, so if you're following what's happening in Fairbanks, you're following what's happening in Juneau, you're following what's happening in multiple other cities and communities, and it's not just urban areas. There are many, many rural and remote districts that are facing the same sorts of things with school closures and all of those kinds of combinations and what's happening. And so they're very real things. And I think we're probably a year or so behind in that, because we have, you know, we consistently have, you know, tried to be very conservative in our budgeting, and we've looked at our staffing and we do all these things. We had a few more kids this year, which was great, which we're also down now in numbers. So the student count that we had in the fall was almost 470, and we're at 454 right now.
Oh.
So that is a problem for our district. It helps provide a buffer. And then in the fall, if we don't retain, or if some of those students don't return, or for whatever reason, you know, there people have moved, people moved in, people moved out, more than we typically see in our district. We're not typically, we don't usually have that much fluctuation. We might have, you know, 5 to 8 kids one way or the other, but it's a pretty large number to come in and a pretty large number to go out. That makes it also challenging, because every one of those students, you know, the amount of funding that goes with 20 students can be upwards of $150,000-$160,000. So
right.
That's a huge impact. And it's not like you can close down a classroom because you've lost 20 kids because they're age 5 all the way up to age 18. So it doesn't work like that. It's not
right.
That simple.
Right, right.
Which people probably can understand that. But so those are challenges as well. And we just have reached that point now. We talked with the borough about this when we met with them, and I do think they were receptive and they were listening to us, and I appreciated that. They're dealing with a lot of challenges as well, financially and just, you know, dealing with the economy here locally, and we understand that. We have never asked for funding to the cap in my 23 years here, and it is time. We've had a good deal here, and we have reached the point where the costs have just skyrocketed to such a point with inflation, with everything else that we're dealing with, and there are just no more hats to put on people. So we'll be doing, you know, we're looking at every single line item, every single staff member. If somebody retires or somebody moves on or whatever those things look like, every one of those will be looked at just like we always do. But it will be significant if we don't see that funding locally, and certainly we are completely up in the air with what's happening at the state right now. So there's literally nothing to count on there. And we did budget on zero last year as well. We budgeted on no increase last year when we brought our budget to the school board and discussed this with the borough. We did not plan for an increase. So we were one of those districts that was in a good position in the fall, mm-hmm. because we hadn't counted on something. I think we're going to have to budget the same way this year, which is really challenging.
Budget for a zero state increase in BSA.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's funding. I think that's what you have to do. The challenge locally is we don't know what their funding allocation is going to be to us either. So
when do you find out about that local funding?
Whenever.
May, June, because that's their budget cycle.
And your budget cycle is slightly earlier.
Well, we need to, I mean, it's June 15th officially. We have to submit it to the state.
We have to work through it before then.
Yep. We need to know what, you know, where that's going, or at least have an idea about
it. Did you get, what sort of feedback did you get from the borough? Did you get any assurances or just?
No, Sarah was
there. More of just listening to where we're at, what position mm-hmm. we're in right now. And at that point, SB1, it had passed, but we all were kind of not particularly optimistic about him signing it or ignoring it. We felt like he was going to do a veto anyway.
Dunleavy made it quite clear that he was going to veto it.
Yeah, so that was, and the assembly was saying the same thing. They weren't under any impression either that we wouldn't, it wouldn't fall, he wouldn't fall through on it, follow through with it.
Yeah.
So what's next for the budget? Do you have any dates, any work sessions with the borough? When do you start working on that budget to start ironing things out?
Well, we'll be bringing preliminary numbers to at least for sure the April meeting, and we may mm-hmm. end up trying to schedule another conversation with the assembly at some point, either before or after that. We have had interest from assembly members who have come in to either meet with Shannon and I individually to ask questions, and we've had several assembly members who have come in to do that, so we always appreciate that interest in trying to dig into some of the details. We had some pretty significant conversation about the cost of the swimming pool and the aquatic center with the assembly, just the discussion around the sort of the shared costs. But the agreement that was made years ago when that pool was built, that it was able to secure funding, the group that was really working hard to make it happen, was able to secure that funding by getting it on the state's capital improvement list. And so that was great. I mean, that was smart. That was a smart move as a community. But it has definitely held us to a funding amount that we pay to part of what we do is we pay about $180,000 toward the utilities for that pool.
Mm-hmm. And that's because this all of the students, I believe it's K-12, right? All of the students have swim classes.
K through five, not 12.
Mm-hmm. Excuse mm-hmm. me.
Yeah, 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not on Fridays.
And so that is a fairly large expense for the school district. But presumably, if you had to cut that expense, that would also be a problem for the borough, because then the Parks and Recreation, the borough, would not be getting that money from mm-hmm. the school district. So,
So I think that's the conversation that we're having about as a community. We're really going to have to look at what priorities are in our community and what people value, what services people want. And a pool doesn't make money. It doesn't make money in any community I've ever known. Mm-hmm. It's a fabulous service. Like I said, I think they did a great job getting that whole thing funded and getting a very significant reimbursement, which the borough did at the time, which is great. I mean, that was a smart way to do it. They couldn't, by designating it that way. However, we are where we are, and we need to have a larger conversation about costs, and we don't get to really raise revenue. So that's a conversation I think that they'll be having, at the borough level about how to raise revenue in a community, because I think that's where we are.
Yeah.
Or we really significantly reduce or shutter things. I don't know. I mean, that's not for me to say, but I'm just, just talking about the dollars themselves. Mm-hmm. It's things cost money. run and
and you can't do it off of income from 2017.
Right.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
No.
So, Sarah, you are on the agenda as the school board president giving an update on the negotiation process with the mm-hmm. teachers union. And I was interested to hear that initially you had been planning to wait to renew the contracts for non-tenured teachers until after that negotiation was done. But it looks like you're going to be renewing those contracts at the meeting tonight, or voting whether or not to renew those contracts. Why did you decide to go ahead with those contracts, even though you don't know how much those agreements with the teachers union are going to be costing?
Well, at some point we had to move forward with trying to plan for the next school year, and that was letting non-tenured teachers know whether we can retain them or not, or mm-hmm. attempt to retain them or not. And we are moving to mediation, which our first meeting is April 3rd.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean to move to mediation?
So that's where we have a mediator that works with both the district representatives and the association's representatives, and kind of goes back and forth between the two to see if we can come to an agreement on the contract.
Does that mean that the contract is getting more complicated and difficult to find a solution to?
Yeah, exactly, to get down to the nitty-gritty and finish up. And so it's lots of districts move to this point at some point. And so it is a first for me to have to, you know, after I think 4 negotiations with the association, but it's just kind of the time. And I think it might be quite effective for both parties to, you know, I'll be taking an entire day off and not working. And sorry, Petersburg, but we'll be, you know, kind of sequestered for a day. The difference is our negotiations were open to the public prior to that. Under mediation, they're not. But the hope is that we'll be able to come to something both parties are happy with. And it will kind of some sense of relief for our non-tenured teachers on whether they've got a job next year or not.
Okay. Because had you been hearing from the non-tenured teachers worrying about that?
They wouldn't contact me necessarily. I don't know if Erica heard from them, but it's always a stress, I'm sure.
Yep. It definitely.
And to be honest, probably even for our tenured teachers, because at some point, if you have to cut the budget far enough, you're digging into that depth. You're getting those that are non-tenured, and then you get into those that are, because you have to shuffle and and move things around enough. We're not there yet, but the next 3 years, yeah, we will be if something doesn't happen at the state level.
Because personnel is one of the more expensive budget items that can actually be eliminated, other than, you know, unlike maintenance or heating bills.
Yeah, you can't pay for your insurance. Yeah,
you can reduce an order of, you know, of computers for a year, and that will, you know, get you $35,000, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, those are all things that are being looked at. We are looking at every single one of those things. We are looking at supply budgets. We are looking at curriculum. We are looking at technology. We are looking at all of those kinds of, every one of those sort of fixed costs. But, you know, you can't do much about a $45,000 increase to, you know, cyber insurance, you know, things like that. I mean, those are just things that happen, and that's why you want to maintain a reasonable fund balance so that you can, you know, deal with those situations that come up that you don't know. There are things that just happen that you just don't know. You can't plan.
And the fund balance is the money that Shannon told me that I am not allowed to think of it as extra money, but it is the money that is a little bit like a savings account that is there as a buffer for the things that come up.
Yep. It's meant to be just like any business that you really have to have that amount, because otherwise where do you go? You know, we can't anticipate long-term sub issues, for example. You know, you can't, they're just things that happen in any business, but certainly in the school business. And we are a people business. So we're not a place that, you know, if a second grade teacher is gone, you have to have a second grade replacement. So you can't just not have that position. And, you know, and in some businesses, some places you can do that. You know, you have two or three people that are in an office working and somebody's out, and people just kind of pick up, or the tasks just remain there until the person comes back, and that's what you do. But in schools, that's not how it is. So if you have a special needs student that has an intensive aid to support them, you cannot not have that person there. You know, there's laws around all of that. So I think that's also something that makes schools a little bit unique, just in that regard. We are all about people, all about kids, and you know, getting them what they need. And I think it's just important also for the community to understand that we have worked very hard here to retain the things that people do value. So if it means that we're going to make a decision about increasing a class size, or we're going to make a decision about adding a grant responsibility and, you know, hiring someone to do something like that, we always err on it going to the classroom. Like, we want it to go to keep class sizes low. We want to go to being able to try to provide a robust course offering list to our students. We are a small high school. We provide a lot of opportunities for our kids here. And we have kids who are going to go right from here into the fishing industry. We have kids who are going to go to work, you know, at Rockies or downtown at the borough, or, you know, all those things. So there's a lot of things that people have to be prepared to do. And there's also people who are going to leave here and go, you know, get accepted to Yale and go become engineers, you know. So there's trying to provide the gamut of opportunities for kids in our community is something that's really valued by us and valued by the community and supported, I would say. And so that's where I guess I feel that way about just saying that to the community, that there's an investment to be made in our kids, and it's worth it to continue to provide those opportunities and a work environment, I think, for people that doesn't have them in classes of 35, which is what Fairbanks, their PTR is, their pupil-teacher ratio. They've increased it because of all these budget issues. They're going to 35 to 1. 35 kids.
What is it here?
In a class.
Oh, I think the most we have is, what, 23 maybe in a classroom in a grade school?
Yeah, and most of them are...
And high school is even less than that.
Mm-hmm, depending on specialty courses. So, yeah, no, it's more in the 15, 18, 12.
Which is
even.
Almost unheard of. If you look anywhere, unless you're another extremely rural area, you go... I hear a lot of comparisons with Washington. Washington's doing this. Washington's like, yeah, and they got 35. I mean, when we left Washington 23 years ago, there was 28 kids in my daughter's third grade class, and we got here and there were 20.
What happens when there's a higher ratio?
Kids get lost. They get neglected, not intentionally neglected, but there's only so many minutes in the day for a teacher to be able to focus on a kid that might be struggling or bored because the material's too easy for them. I think physically it's claustrophobic when rooms aren't built for 28 kids. They're built for 18 to 20, you know. You know, stop into the elementary school and see how cozy it is now, and then add another 5 to 7 kids in each room.
Yeah.
And you as a teacher would know better about what the repercussions are. But I do like to not joke, but joke. My father-in-law, who passed away 5 years ago, wrote his dissertation in the 50s about classroom sizes and the importance of it is keeping them small in order for kids to succeed in education. That was in the 50s, and we're still battling it how many years later. So,
yeah, I would agree. And I think also just looking at some of the challenges that our kids are facing and what they're bringing in the door, those things are not getting simpler. Our kids are not bringing less baggage in the door with them. They're dealing with a lot of stressors in a lot of kids' lives. And there's a lot of family stressors. There's work, economic stressors, and there's academic concerns that we need to meet. And in fairness to all the craziness around the READS Act, and there's a lot of it, and still it's not being funded, FYI, enough. But the goal of that is good. We should be focused on our kids, you know, getting where they need to be by third grade, and so that they can be successful, you know, all the way through and do what they want to do beyond school.
Yeah, you've given me an excellent segue, because the last thing I wanted to ask you about was the testing. I know that Cindy Fry is going to talk about mid-year testing, and then Heather Kahn was going to talk about the Amplify testing, which is the testing that charts how kids are doing for the READS Act. What sort of, do you need updates mid-year like this? What does that tell you? Are you adjusting what the school does based on that testing that's happening?
We do. And I would say we've been trying to do a much better job of this the last few years, just publicly and with the board, because it is what we should be focused. It's not the only thing we focus on, but we do appreciate the information that comes from the MAP test, from the Measures of Academic Progress. We do see value in it, and we think it's important for our kids to also see their strengths and areas of challenge, and that's a big piece of it too. It's not meant to be a gotcha. It's meant to be like, look at all the things you've learned and all the things you know, and look at the things that you still need some work on. Teachers do use that information to make decisions and move forward, and I think it's important that we are held accountable for what we're doing and in the classrooms, and how are we providing that instruction and what's happening. Heather has a lot of data around the Amplify screener information. We're trying to pare it down. It was too many slides, so we're working on that. She loves to talk about it, and she's super excited because there is a lot of growth. So
that's,
I think,
good to know.
That's exciting.
I was talking with Mara Lutomsky yesterday about this Amplify testing, the READS Act testing, about the fact that, you know, if you are a kid in third grade, or is it third grade and above, or third through fifth grade, where if you are not meeting the standards, you do get held back?
Well, third grade is that trigger. Every
year,
there's requirements. There's requirements K through three that you have to have the conversations. There's all those requirements around how many meetings and all that. Third grade is sort of where the final rubber meets the road, I guess, for lack of a better word. And there's some decisions that parents can make the decision to move their student forward, but there are requirements around.
Okay.
There's supposed to be 20 hours of summer school that it has to be met, and then there's they have to sign off that they're making that decision to move their child forward, regardless of where, you know, where they may be. It's allowed for some conversations, I think, with families around attendance. I think it's allowed. And again, it's not a judgmental thing. It's just a thing. So if you're missing a chunk of instruction or several chunks of instruction, that's a big deal. And I think sometimes we kind of make some assumptions about, oh, they're five, you know, it's okay. You know, we can go to Mexico. And again, some people may make a decision to do that. And it's not a value judgment. It's not a value judgment. It's just a thing. You know, when you're missing that kind of instruction, you don't really, it's not like you give a five-year-old a packet and say, you know, go do this work or whatever. It doesn't work like that. There's, you know, there's instruction that happens that that's important. And those building blocks, if they're missed with kids or large chunks are missed, and they can be for lots of reasons. You're sick. All kinds of things, you know, can happen. But I think it's become a bigger part of the conversation for people too, just to be a little bit more aware of it and maybe a bit more intentional about, mm-hmm. about you know, missing instruction.
And you think the READS Act, the fact that the READS Act requires all of those conversations with parents is really helping parents be a little bit more mindful about what it is, what decisions they're making that, that affect their children's learning.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's nice to have some data points to talk with people about, because data is just data, you know, and it's not like a one-time thing like the AK Star, right? That's, we've always kind of pushed back on those, the big test, you know, that happens in the spring and it's mm-hmm. one day and you take your test and you're judged for life or whatever. But that's not that's a tool. We have to do that. That's one of the things we have to do. We're coming up on AK Star testing in the next few weeks, and that's a requirement. That's the law. 3rd through 10th grade, that's what you got to do. And that's fine. That's a piece. But really what the piece is looking at those specific, smaller, you know, quicker assessments that are happening often. Mm-hmm. That are meant to be like, oh yeah, no, they really do know that skill. Boom, check it off. Move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And those are useful. For teachers, that's useful. And I think for kids, it's useful. Look how you did. You did great. You know, you've got this. We're moving on. And,
yeah.
And for parents too. You know, look at all these, you know, things that they've achieved. It's great. And here's some things to work on.
Yeah.
And it's specific. And I think that's helpful for people. So I would say that's a win.
Okay. Well, for listeners, if you are interested to know how students are doing overall in elementary school, Heather Kahn apparently has a slightly reduced presentation tonight.
We're working on it. It'll be, yes, and then we'll get kind of a
but
picture.
It's still probably
of,
incredibly thorough.
It'll be thorough, and then just information about just map data in general, because we've got a couple of data points for that. So.
Okay.
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, our time is up. Once again, KFSK will broadcast the school board meeting live tonight at 6 p.m. And you'll be able to find that on our website, kfsk.org, tomorrow. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you.